Our fourth speaker is Dr. Jack Keane. Dr. Keane is president and managing partner of Global Biohazard Technologies, Incorporated of Midlothian, Virginia. Dr. Keane has many years of experience in hospital medical microbiology and infection control, and is a specialist in biomedical lab safety and public health microbiology. Jack has a significant educational background, including his master's and doctorate of public health, UNC Chapel Hill. Dr. Keane has served as a technical advisor to OSHA, EPA, NIH, CDC, regarding the control of biohazard materials. Jack has provided biocontainment validation of BSL-3 laboratories and has authored many articles on lab biosafety. Please welcome Dr. Keane.
Thank you, Bob. Can everybody hear me? Now, if I can figure out which one of these things I have to push. Yeah. Learning objectives. You've already come to that. Okay. I want to acknowledge not only some of my friends on the dais there, but Mr. Ron Trower, who's my business partner and a longtime Plum Island and NIH safety person that helped me with this. We're going to talk about some biocontainment facts, some design requirements, operational differences, failures, and some problems and solutions that we've found. We do validation of biocontainment labs all over the world, so we've seen some interesting things. I want to describe the actual biocontainment design requirements, something that we've touched on. Understand the potential problems of complex ventilation design, and explain the difference in operational differences between complex and simple designs. Fact number one, when you hear the word containment, most people think contaminated. Okay, containment does not mean contaminated. Biocontainment labs are not contaminated labs unless there has been a spill, a catastrophic spill, outside of the biosafety cabinet. Remember, the biosafety cabinet is the primary containment device. Another thing that we have to recognize is that we work a lot with design, and one of the problems is that the people who work in the laboratories are not always aware of the design of the facility. Containment is dependent upon the biosafety cabinet functioning properly. And if you're testing them on a regular basis, I've never seen one really fail. Procedures, I always say that even an idiot like me can overcome some of the best design in the world. I try to convince PhD scientists that they don't know more than anybody else. They just lasted longer. All right. And they think that the design and the testing is going to protect them in these laboratories. And it's not, because they're working with the materials. They are performing procedures on a day-to-day basis. All of the ventilation design in the world is not going to keep a researcher from getting infected if they make a mistake in the laboratory. Okay? So procedures is very important. And then facility design. What is a biocontainment lab designed for? Anybody got an idea? It's not to protect the worker. It's not to protect the work. It's to protect you and me who are outside of that containment envelope. That's the only purpose for it. Keep it simple. when, not if, the system fails. It has to fail neutral or slightly negative. It's okay to fail neutral, guys. It doesn't have to stay negative forever. Chris explained that the BMBL says no airflow reversal. But then they've kind of figured out that there is no such thing as zero. There's no such thing as no airflow reversal. I think it was one of you guys was showing a plot of the airflow in lab, and it goes like this. Because the equipment does that. Okay? Have you ever seen a fan that goes just like that, deadline? No. There's always fluctuation. Why do we look at 0.05 pressure differential? The reason is that if you look at 0.05, that's just about the point at which a normal fan is not going to go way out of balance, way out of whack. Okay? So when the system fails, as good engineers as we may have, they will fail. We want it to be neutral. Okay? You want to minimize nuisance alarms, and I'll talk about that a little bit later on. Nuisance alarms are a nuisance to the researchers, trust me. We want the facility to be reasonably easy to maintain. And we want to separate the containment HVAC from the rest of the building. How many of you are interested in keeping green buildings and, you know, making sure that you get as little excess whatever? Trust me. Separate the containment. Now, it may be a surprise to you, even after some of these guys have talked about it, there are no legal requirements for the design of biocontainment HVAC systems. None. There are guidelines, there are suggestions, but nowhere is it written that you must design the system in a certain way or get thrown to jail. It's not there. The standard of the industry is the NIH Design Requirements Manual. And if you read it, and read it critically, you'll find that there are a lot of problems with it. But it is the standard for NIH and for NIH-funded laboratories. Do you have to follow it? NIH can't even follow it. Okay? But NIH can make exceptions for their buildings. Okay? And if they can make exceptions for their buildings, they can make exceptions for your building. As long as you meet the intent, and that is to contain whatever it is the people are working with. It should be used as a guide. All right? Complex designs. They're the bane of my existence. Because a lot of times I don't get involved, and this is a plea, I guess. I'm a clinical microbiologist gone bad. I actually did my doctoral dissertation at the National Cancer Institute working on the ventilation of animal facilities. And one of the reasons you got that 0.05 is because I published a paper that showed that that works. But the more complex the design, and people make them complex because they don't want them to fail, they require people that are trained on specifics of the control systems. They have to know how those controls work. And I can tell you there's a lot of people out there that are running these buildings that don't know how their controls work. Okay? The more complex the systems, the more potential problems you have with operation and maintenance. It's okay if you got somebody that's dedicated to do it, but if you don't, you got a problem. They're more expensive to build and they're more expensive to operate. I will mention about the maintenance people in just a minute. Simple designs, we're afraid they're going to fail. We're afraid they're not flexible enough, whatever. Okay, simple design, you have a simple control system, you have less maintenance, and they are more cost effective. Trying to design a system so it never fails makes it doomed to fail. Fact. The more complicated the system, I had a guy tell me he had redundant fans, and we asked him about those redundant fans, and he said, well, if one goes down, everything else will keep on running. I said, what if both of them go down at the same time? Oh, that can't happen. Okay. 2 weeks later, they had a thunderstorm, and both fans went down at the same time. Okay. The reason that we shut down even the redundant fans when we're testing these things, because you got to know what happens when the whole system goes down. Okay. Trying to design the system so it never fails creates more failure points, which are difficult to control. It makes the whole system more difficult to diagnose when there is a failure. And it makes the system more difficult to maintain. There is no failure-proof system. Anybody ever comes up and tells you that their system is failure-proof? Don't believe them. You can't do it. There's no such thing as zero. Okay? It tends toward being this. But then you have to balance whether or not the people who are going to have to operate this can afford it, and in fact it does work. One of the, and I don't know whether you guys will agree with me or not, but the most common problem in getting one of these facilities up and running is getting the air conditioning, the HVAC right. Is that right? The engineer shaking his head. Okay. Yes. I'm working on one now that we're actually going to be doing the certification or validation of the laboratory this week. We were supposed to have done it 2 years ago. And why? Because the HVAC system was so complicated that it hasn't worked. And they've had to tweak it and change it and make it simple to start with. One of the things that I wanted to mention to you, we've seen systems that were designed to reset the delta P at the doors each time a door is open or it loses a pressure set point. Well, those of us who took Physics 101 know that if I open that door back there, right now there's a pressure differential across it. If I open that door, what happens to the pressure differential? I get much bigger space, and the pressure drop goes, okay? So I get virtually no pressure differential. I still have a little bit of air coming through, but if I walk through the door, I'm going to cause a perturbation of the air. We had a design where they actually, every time a door opened and the pressure changed, the system tried to correct for that. And as soon as it corrected for that door, it had to correct for this door, and then it had to correct for that door, and then it had to go back and correct for this door. And they never could get the thing to function properly. Why did they need it? That was the question. They didn't. Okay. Alarms. We had establishing a set point for the pressure monitors on the doors. Low pressure alarm is good. That tells you that the system is going out of whack. But a high pressure alarm is a nuisance alarm. The researchers don't have to do anything. It's just going to mess things up. So the lab is going to go more negative. Chris showed you what happens when the lab goes too negative. So you have to have a problem. nuisance alarms for researchers are going to cause people to ignore the alarms. I went into one lab where they actually had a styrofoam box over the alarm, and it was marked, you know, alarm silencer. Because they had, I mean, these are bright people, but they had too many nuisance alarms. You don't need it. Alarm for what you need to know. If the pressure, if the ventilation system is going down and you've got a possibility of a positive excursion, then people in the lab need to stop work. So they need to know that that's happening. Okay? Anything else, they don't need to know. It's all on the BAS, the maintenance people are taking care of it. Researchers don't need to know that. The containment lab is only part of a small overall building, generally. I've worked on some that were pretty big, but even so, they were small compared to the entire building. So the correct HVAC system, this is the containment. HVAC is the containment. And having a setback for off hours is not necessary in a containment lab. The rest of the building is okay. But when you start messing with the biosafety cabinets and all that kind of stuff, you can't do it. Okay? Look at other areas of the building for energy savings. I've got one particular client whose lab was 2.5 years late getting up and running. It was a one-room lab with an anteroom, and it was late because the HVAC system, they engineered out some of the HVAC for that one room. Now, when you walk into the building, you walk into a three-story atrium with marble floors and walnut walls, okay? But for one fan, for one room of the laboratory space, they value engineered out some of the important things that were necessary for the containment. Okay? Do not, under any circumstances, value engineer out HVAC systems for these labs. Decontamination systems. Now, in the case where Scott's working with large animals and they have to decontaminate regularly after certain experiments, you do need to have decontamination systems. For normal research laboratories, you don't need those big multi-million dollar decontamination systems. Okay? You may have one accident in 20 years. That's pretty much the information that's available now. One accident outside the biosafety cabinet where you would have to decontaminate the whole place. And when that happens, you can do it with a portable unit. You don't need to have a whole... you've got systems out there right now that are just sitting there, and they'll probably never be used. So it's much more efficient and economical with portable units if you need to do the decontamination. There are companies that will actually come in and do it for you. Biosafety cabinet exhaust. I see all the time where they're using the biosafety cabinets as the exhaust point. The ducted biosafety cabinet is the exhaust point for the rooms. And that creates a condition where your exhaust can't be adjusted because the biosafety cabinet requires a specific exhaust. And how do you balance the room? Okay. Plus, you're filling up the HEPA filter on the biosafety cabinet simply by pulling air through it all the time. That's particularly true when they pull air through it before they're finished with the building and messes up. Okay. But the exhaust setting for a biosafety cabinet is specific and critical for the operation of the cabinet. Look at how the cabinet operates. The thimble units, that's great. That's fine because they're not hard ducted. But the ones that are hard ducted, make sure you've got the right static pressure. The Class II biological safety cabinets are loved by some researchers. Okay? They think they're different, but they're not. Except that they will cause all kinds of air balancing problems, and they require 2 inches of static pressure for them to work. And it says very clearly in the manufacturer's information on building them, on putting them in, you have to have 2 inches static pressure. Okay? If you don't, you won't have. I've got one particular building that's got, I think, something like 20-some-odd B2 cabinets, and they've never been able to open it because they can't get the rooms balanced. And you might balance it today, and tomorrow will be out again. They require air supply in the room, and then it's exhausted. Okay. The operations of these things will pull air from other areas as well. Okay. So, take it from the guy that validates them on a regular basis. There is no one way to design the HVA system for a containment lab. Please, when you can, keep it simple. Do not request information from the researcher on what they want. A BSL-3 lab is a BSL-3 lab is a BSL-3 lab. They will learn to work in it, and the lab will be better than whatever they're working in now. Okay? Don't value engineer containment HVAC systems. And remember, the one requirement is directional airflow, okay, or neutral. It's okay to fail.
Any questions for Dr. Keene? All right, thank you very much.